Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Wanted to go through a small part of The Road to Serfdom that I was listening to the other day on an audiobook when I was hiking. And I think it's very important because I think it gives us some incredible insight, really some shocking insights as to what may be the motivation behind the World Economic Forum, the IMF, the global elite, and their push towards corporatism. It's kind of a fascinating dynamic that often, at least to me, has not made a lot of sense, where you've got this group that's just blatantly Marxist, but yet they are corporatists at the same time. And you may say to yourself, well, George, it makes all the sense in the world because they're just, we'll keep it YouTube friendly. they have the same belief as a certain political party in Germany in 1930 that were fascists. And economic fascism, as you guys know, is basically corporatism. And it's where the state really has a significant amount of influence on those corporate CEOs, let's say. But I think there could be more to it than that. Let's just assume for the time being that these corporate or these global elite have good intentions. And I know that's a stretch, but let's just assume they do for a moment. What I didn't realize, and I've listened to Road to Serfdom quite a few times, but I never picked up this part, is that back in the 1930s, the socialists themselves actually favored monopoly, a lot of them. And you kind of scratch your head and say, well, isn't that paradoxical? That doesn't make sense at all. But the way that Hayek articulates what was going on during the time, it really starts to make a lot of sense. So I wanted to share those insights with you. Let's shoot over to YouTube, the audiobook of Road to Serfdom, and we'll play a short clip.
Unless the argument of this book has been completely misunderstood, the author will not be suspected of any tenderness toward the capitalists if he stresses here that it would nevertheless be a mistake to put the blame for the modern movement toward monopoly exclusively or mainly on that class. Their propensity in this direction is neither new, nor would it by itself be likely to become a formidable power.
He's talking about the push that the capitalists themselves have towards creating monopolies.
The fatal development was that they have succeeded in enlisting the support of an ever-increasing number of other groups and, with their help, in obtaining the support of the state. In some measure, the monopolists have gained this support either by letting other groups participate in their gains or, and perhaps even more frequently, by persuading them that the formation of monopolies was in the public interest. But the change in public opinion, which through its influence on legislation and judicature has been the most important factor to make this development possible, is more than anything the result of the propaganda against competition by the left. Compare on this the instructive article by W. Arthur Lewis, Monopoly and the Law, Modern Law Review, Volume 6, Number 3, April 1943. Very frequently, even measures aimed against the monopolists, in fact, serve only to strengthen the power of monopoly. Every raid on the gains of monopoly, be it in the interest of particular groups or of the state as a whole, tends to create new vested interests, which will help to bolster up monopoly. A system in which large privileged groups profit from the gains of monopoly may be politically much more dangerous, and monopoly in such a system certainly is much more powerful than in one where the profits go to a limited few. But though it should be clear that, for example, the higher wages which the monopolist is in a position to pay are just as much the result of exploitation as his own profit, and are just as certain to make poorer not only all the consumers, but still more, all other wage earners, not merely those who benefit from it. But the public generally nowadays accept the ability to pay higher wages as a legitimate argument in favor of monopoly.
Okay, so just in case you guys aren't following it, let me explain. First, he's saying that as the capitalists gain monopoly or have a monopoly, that is usually a result of others sharing in the wealth, and the others he's talking about. And it switched from Hayek talking to this other author, in case you didn't pick that up. But when Hayek was talking about it, he was saying that these others that are usually part of the profits are politicians. So as an example, you see all these huge corporations with lobbyists in Washington. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about these corporations putting lobbyists there to create a moat around their own business to where it makes it very difficult for small and mid-sized businesses to compete with them. And the way they usually stay in or continue to have the power of monopoly is not by creating goods and services more efficiently at a cheaper price, like it has been in the past in the United States. But now it's more so a result, and this was him talking in the 1940s, it's even worse now. But now the monopolies that we see are usually a result of interference by the government in free market capitalism itself. But I think what's even more interesting is the other author was pointing out, and he was by no means a fan of monopoly or capitalists or the free market, but he was pointing out that a lot of times the general public and the socialists tend to favor monopolies because they believe the monopoly is in a position to pay higher wages to the average Joe and Jane. So the socialist, if they're trying to create a workers' paradise or move in that direction, they're going to favor the state getting involved to create monopoly because they believe those monopolies will be able to pay higher wages.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
It doesn't end there. Let's continue the clip.
Even more surprising, perhaps, is the remarkable tenderness which many socialists are likely to show toward the rentier bondholders, to whom monopolist organization of industry frequently guarantees secure incomes. That their blind enmity to profits should lead people to represent effortless fixed income as socially or ethically more desirable than profits, and to accept even monopoly to secure such a guaranteed income to, for example, railway bondholders, is one of the most extraordinary symptoms of the perversion of values which has taken place during the last generation.
Okay, let me explain that to you. So the view of this particular socialist that's being described is that monopoly is good not only because they're in the position to pay higher wages to the workers, but also those people, those pension funds, let's say the teachers' unions, the firefighter unions, the police unions, well, they are at less risk of the bonds that are being held by that pension fund defaulting because there's less risk of that monopoly going out of business. And that benefits the worker. So again, just to understand their rationale, you've got a huge pension fund that represents workers. That pension fund has the option of buying, let's say, two different corporate bonds. One corporate bond is from monopoly XYZ, and they're even though they might get a little lower yield, the risk of them defaulting is a lot lower. Therefore, the risk of those, therefore the probability of the workers being paid by the pension fund increases substantially compared to buying the bonds of Corporation B that does not have a monopoly, and therefore the probability of them actually now the workers being paid through the pension fund that owns those bonds, the probability of them being paid back with interest decreases slightly. So the author was talking about how this is completely perverse, but he's explaining how, in the eyes of some socialists, even if they have good intentions, they would favor a monopoly because it pays higher wages, and the chances that the bondholders get paid back are actually increased above and beyond what you'd see in a free market. So again, I wanted to point that out because let's just assume for a moment that there are individuals at the Davos types that actually do have good intentions, but they're still Marxist socialists. You have to put yourself in their shoes, and you have to try to see the world through the lens in which they see the world to try to predict the probabilities of what may happen in the future or what they'll do to achieve their objectives. And when you look at corporatism and what they are doing, and by the way, let me just go over to their site real quick. This is the World Economic Forum. Our partners, if you guys haven't seen this, let me read it to you. World Economic Forum partners are leading global companies developing solutions to the world's greatest challenges. They are the driving force behind the forum's programs. So, in other words, these corporations are the ones that are implementing the objectives of the World Economic Forum. And if you're someone at the World Economic Forum that believes their objectives are priority number one, are you going to be able to achieve those objectives better through corporations that have a monopoly, or corporations that have to compete with others, with small and mid-sized businesses? See, and then if you're one of these socialists or Marxists at the World Economic Forum that actually does have good intentions, then you could see how they would favor monopoly from the standpoint of what was outlined in the Road to Serfdom. And that's that they may have the ability to pay higher wages, and there's a lower risk that they default on the bonds. Those were some of the interesting insights from the Road to Serfdom that I wanted to share with you guys. And if you haven't read the book, what on earth are you doing? We are living through these times, the times that were outlined in this wonderful piece of literature that really kind of gives you a roadmap to what we're seeing today. And you're going to be able to predict what may happen in the future so much better if you read history, you understand history. And I think there's no better way to do it than to research it through the eyes and the experiences of one Friedrich Hayek. As I hope you enjoy the rest of your afternoon, make sure that you're always standing up for freedom, for liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.